the Arctic is warming twice as fast as the rest of the planet. The Arctic also happens to be where you'll find Alaska's biggest oil fields. And that's created a business opportunity for Brian Shoemaker. As we step outside his warehouse in Anchorage, Shoemaker asks me to do a little pretending.
Imagine for a moment you've just landed in a helicopter out on the tundra, and you're about 100 miles from anywhere, and it's costing you $1 a second to be here. This is what we do.
We picture ourselves hundreds of miles to the north, above the Arctic Circle, on the remote North Slope.
Okay, so we're gonna find a spot.
That is a huge drill.
Pretend that this is the center line of an ice road.
Shoemaker drills a hole in the ground. Companies do most of their oil exploration on the North Slope in winter, when the tundra is frozen. But winters in Alaska are getting warmer and shorter. In the mid-1980s, oil companies could count on the tundra freezing in early fall. But now, scientists say freeze-up often doesn't happen until December. That's almost a two-month delay. So Shoemaker's technology helps oil companies make the most of the shorter season. His business is called Beaded Stream, and he's demonstrating one of his products for me now.
We're inserting sensors at the surface, and every 10 centimeters all the way to 30 centimeters, or 1 foot.
So this is like a little, this is a wire,
yeah,
a multicolored wire that you just stuck in the ground. These wires track exactly when the ground freezes, pinpointing the moment oil companies can get to work. That way, Shoemaker says they can squeeze the longest possible oil exploration season into steadily shrinking winters.
Usually with our technology, we can get folks out there days to weeks early. And so it translates into huge cost savings. But most importantly, sometimes it makes projects that weren't even doable, doable.
Beaded Stream isn't alone. Oil companies now support a small cottage industry of consultants and manufacturers, all providing workarounds for the fact that the frozen ground they rely on to find and produce oil isn't so frozen anymore. It's one sign among many that the days when oil companies could shrug off climate change are over. Hello, and welcome to Midnight Oil from Alaska's Energy Desk. I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh. This is Season 2, The Big Thaw, and we're looking at one of the biggest challenges facing Alaska now, climate change. This is our last episode, and we've reached the point in our series when we need to introduce our villain.
The oil giants have colonized every corner of our planet.
For decades, they have corrupted our governments, ravaged our planet, and treated the atmosphere like an open sewer.
We should be tackling the fossil fuel companies directly. Leave it
in the ground.
In the ground.
In the global debate over climate change, and in a lot of environmentalist ad campaigns, they're labeled as the bad guys, the boogeymen, the culprits. In today's episode, we're talking about oil companies. The oil industry didn't get its climate change bad guy reputation for nothing. It has stood behind lobbying efforts to resist climate change policies. It has donated to groups that cultivate doubt about whether climate change is even real. And then, of course, big oil has gotten very rich off a product that's helping warm the planet. Companies are now facing a wave of climate activism called the Keep It in the Ground movement, it being fossil fuels like oil. Scientists argue if we're going to keep climate change from getting a lot worse, a full third of the world's oil reserves cannot be burned. But climate change is coming for the oil companies too. It threatens their reputations, their business models, and in some cases, the actual physical infrastructure they built to extract all that oil in the first place. So in this episode, we're taking a lot closer look at the narrative of oil companies as climate change culprits, because climate change is happening in real life, and real life is a lot more complicated than that. Oil companies are already seeing the consequences of climate change in Alaska. They specially engineered their operations for freezing conditions, and as temperatures go up, it's creating problems. Now, this isn't something Alaska's oil companies love to talk about. I asked for a lot of interviews on how climate change is directly affecting their operations in the Arctic, and no luck. But one way to understand how Alaska's companies are reacting to climate change is to look at how they're spending money. I'm in another warehouse in Anchorage, a workshop for a second business that helps the oil industry deal with a new, warmer Arctic. It's called Arctic Foundations. Here, guys in protective goggles are manufacturing these long metal tubes filled with a refrigerant.
It's where the heat comes out and goes to the air.
President Ed Yarmak points at the top of the tube. Simply put, these devices are refrigerators for the ground. Oil companies have buried them in the permafrost, all across the North Slope, next to pipelines and buildings and other essential infrastructure. And yeah, you heard that correctly. They're having to refrigerate the Arctic. Actually, Alaska's oil industry has been using Arctic Foundation's devices for decades. Permafrost has never been a reliable foundation. It can thaw simply from the heat of a structure on top of it. But as temperatures rise, Yarmak says thawing permafrost is starting to cause more and more issues on the North Slope. Doors are sticking. Walls are starting to crack.
The floor isn't level anymore. Things aren't the way that they planned them.
That means his product is really starting to come in handy.
Well, to be honest, climate change is pretty good business for our company because we're in the business of making things colder. And climate change is warming things up in Alaska.
Each device is custom made and costs roughly $10,000. I ask Yarmak if he thinks Alaska's oil companies are taking climate change seriously.
I think they're spending a lot of money on it. And so I think it's a very serious issue for oil companies and service companies up on the North Slope.
So you may be wondering, has the wave of climate impacts in Alaska led to some oil industry soul searching? What's the conversation like inside Alaska's oil industry right now? It's an awkward topic, but I was able to convince one guy to talk to me about it.
Okay, we are recording right now. Why don't we just start with who you are, what your background is, and who you represent?
Sure. So my name is Joshua Kindred. I'm environmental counsel for the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, which represents the majority of oil and gas operators and explorers in Alaska.
A few months back, Kindred gamely agreed to sit down for a no-holds-barred conversation about climate change. Kindred is tall, he's personable, he's sporting a well-pressed suit and tie, your friendly neighborhood oil industry lawyer, sticking up for the interests of BP, ExxonMobil, Chevron, and the like. We started out with the basics.
Not to be condescending, but do you think climate change is real and is happening?
It's definitely real. It's definitely happening. Whether you want to go through the sort of endless amount of research, scientific research and data that's out there, but also just anecdotally what we've seen and experienced in Alaska.
Basic question number two. Does Kindred think emissions caused by burning fossil fuels are making climate change worse? Yes, again, he said. Just look at the science.
You'd be hard-pressed to not believe that we're having an effect on climate change.
This simple acknowledgement of a simple fact is perhaps not the message we're used to hearing from someone connected to the oil industry. Another thing Kindred totally acknowledged, shrinking winter seasons are a problem for Alaska's oil companies.
You can definitely see that that amount of time that oil operators have to operate in the winter months is decreasing, and so they're having to adapt accordingly.
To review, Joshua Kindred, defender of oil companies, said climate change is real, climate change is made worse by human-caused emissions, and climate change is creating problems for the industry he's representing. So I had to ask, isn't it a little ironic that fossil fuel companies are now dealing with the consequences of a problem they helped create? Kindred had a lot to say about that. He argued climate activists, like the ones pushing to keep oil in the ground, they can't solely pin this one on the oil industry. That's because the entire global economy runs on fossil fuels. We're all part of the problem.
And it's not as simple as putting a keep it in the ground bumper sticker on your SUV because it doesn't make you less culpable. We're all culpable here. And I think it's convenient to point your finger at the oil industry and say, it's not my fault, but it's all of our faults.
So everyone who drives a car, enjoys air conditioning, flips on a light bulb, we're all likely buying and burning what the fossil fuel industry is selling. Now, where that argument might lose a lot of people is the well-documented fact that oil companies helped fund special interest groups that sowed doubt about climate science. That effort took hold. Many Americans still question whether climate change is real. Kindred didn't jump to deny that. But he didn't want to dwell on it either.
To the extent that they lobbed that at me or at oil industry, fine. But again, what's important is what's the conversation we're having now?
Throughout our interview, Kindred went back and forth between resisting being cast in the role of the climate change villain and a kind of grudging acceptance of it.
I understand that climate change is serious and it's scary, and it probably gives people some sense of comfort to be able to point at the boogeyman or to have a culprit. And that's fine to a certain extent. But I don't know that it's helpful in us finding what that path forward might be.
Kindred's message was this: let's move on from calling big oil the bad guy and talk about figuring this climate change thing out. He agreed with environmentalists that climate change is a problem we need to solve. But Kindred does not believe that means Alaska's oil should stay in the ground. Kindred is fine saying we need to confront climate change on the one hand, and on the other, taking a job with the Trump administration to push for more drilling. And a few weeks after our interview, that's exactly what he did. He left his oil lobbying group to do legal work for the Department of Interior in Alaska. And among other things, he's working on setting up a controversial oil and gas lease sale in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. To acknowledge climate change is a problem, but also advocate for more drilling is a complicated way of looking at things. But Kindred's philosophy puts him in line with many of the world's biggest oil companies. Today, the question of whether the oil industry should be held accountable for climate change is at the center of this huge legal fight. Cities and states are suing oil giants like ExxonMobil, alleging they knew how bad climate change was going to get, yet tried to stop the world from doing something about it. None of the lawsuits have succeeded yet, and the oil companies are fighting back fiercely. But beneath all that, something else is going on. This spring, Exxon held a meeting with investors.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. If I could ask everybody to go ahead and take a seat.
You probably didn't hear much about it. It looked like your average corporate investor meeting, complete with a lot of well-paid suits and a PowerPoint presentation. And it didn't generate many headlines. But that's a little surprising, considering what Exxon was there to talk about.
Welcome back for the energy and carbon session.
For Exxon, a company climate activists see as maybe the biggest and the baddest of the bad guys, this meeting was a turning point.
This was the first time that Exxon had ever held a session devoted entirely to carbon, as they called it, but to the larger issue of climate change.
Amy Harder is a well-known voice in the energy world. She's a veteran reporter who used to work for the Wall Street Journal, and now she's with Axios in Washington, D.C. One of the main issues she follows is how oil companies are strategizing around climate change. And Exxon's meeting got her attention.
You had Darren Woods, the CEO of the company, there talking directly with analysts about this very issue.
We believe that we have an obligation to help address this challenge. We also believe very strongly that we're part of the solution.
The purpose of this meeting was to explain to Exxon's investors how the company fits into a world where climate change not only exists, but where people are trying to do something about it. For Harder, there was one moment towards the end of the meeting that sticks out. It came during the Q&A.
It was a question that, frankly, I would love to ask Darren Woods if they would ever allow me to, which they have not.
An analyst piped up about a climate policy called a carbon tax. That's a fee companies like Exxon would pay based on the amount of emissions they're responsible for. It's one of the most well-known ideas out there to combat climate change, and it's actually something Exxon supports.
I have a cheeky question. I've assumed that Exxon's support of a carbon tax is very savvy. I think it's a very good message for the company to send, but equally, it's likely because you don't think a carbon tax will ever happen. Is that fair?
There was an awkward pause. Then one of Exxon's top managers says,
no. Short answer, no.
And Darren Woods, who was sitting off to the side, sort of stood up and became animated. And it was the most animated, you know, an oil executive could be, talking about why they are advocating for a carbon tax.
There is a cost of carbon in society today. It's an implicit cost that's hidden. And so our view with a carbon tax is making it explicit is a much more effective way.
Okay, let's just pause for a moment.
that was the CEO of Exxon acknowledging in public that climate change is a cost to society and advocating for a carbon tax, a tax that, in fact, would be designed to drive down demand for oil. Now, you don't see climate activists jumping up and down about this. Exxon's take-home message was its oil and gas business is going to be just fine, thank you, even in a world that's trying to confront climate change. The company assumes it can keep selling a lot more oil for decades to come. Exxon also projects that the world will probably blow past that crucial 2 degrees Celsius threshold. That's the amount of warming scientists say will lead to severe impacts across the globe. For many advocates, that position is indefensible. All criticisms aside, Harder's point is this: that Exxon's meeting even happened is a big deal. That its investors were there asking tough questions about climate policy and how it could affect Exxon's business model, and that the CEO was there taking those questions on, that's telling.
They're accustomed to dealing with what reservoirs around the world have the most oil and oil prices and all these other things that really have nothing to do with climate change. So the fact that they were steeped in it, to me, was an indication that climate change is a very big issue from a business perspective for Exxon and other big oil companies.
Exxon's climate meeting fits into a larger debate that's roiling the oil industry right now. For decades, the world's hunger for oil has generally steadily ticked upwards. And in response, companies have done what they do best, find and produce more oil to satisfy that demand. But now, there's hints that might change.
There's been a real sea change in the last 18 months or so in how the oil industry approaches climate change as a financial issue.
Andrew Logan is with Ceres, a Boston-based nonprofit that works with investors and companies pushing the business case for environmentally friendly practices. Logan's focus is oil and gas. And the way he sees it, climate change has gone from a fringe issue to an existential question.
What's changed in the last year or two is that, you know, the industry now, for the first time in its history, is worried that, you know, after a century and a half of growth, global demand for oil may peak and eventually decline. And that is a remarkably fundamental shift for these companies.
The Trump administration may be pulling back from climate policy, but most of the rest of the world is not. Renewables like solar and wind still make up a small fraction of the world's total energy supply, but the sector is growing rapidly. And the world is getting a lot more efficient in how it uses fossil fuels. So some big oil companies are talking about a day when the world's demand for oil stops growing. Companies like BP, which operates Alaska's biggest oil field, and Shell. This year, another company, Norway Statoil, made this big announcement, rolling out a quirky ad with gymnasts, a woman giving birth, and a cartoon butterfly.
Congratulations. Change is beautiful.
Aha, look at me.
Yes, look at you. Change is natural. It's a part of all of us.
Statoil proclaimed to the world that it was taking oil out of its name.
Say hi to change. Say hi to Equinor.
It's reshaping itself as an energy company, not just an oil company. And by 2030, Equinor expects up to 20% of its investments will be in renewable energy and technology to capture carbon emissions. Now, I should stop and add a big asterisk. All oil companies, including the company formerly known as Statoil, agree demand for their product isn't going to dry up anytime soon, and a lot of credible energy analysts agree with them. It's mind-boggling how much oil the world goes through every day. Let's put it in perspective using an example here in Alaska. ConocoPhillips recently announced a huge oil discovery in the Arctic. It's called the Willow Discovery. Conoco is planning to spend years and billions of dollars to develop it. On the high end, Conoco estimates the discovery holds up to 750 million barrels of oil. That's big for Conoco and huge for Alaska. But the world goes through just about that much oil every single week. For the world to stop using so much oil would require a massive, fundamental shift for the global economy. That's one big reason why solving climate change is such a difficult problem. And as giant economies like China and India grow even more, staggering amounts of energy will be needed to power them. So now, oil economists looking to the future are faced with an extremely tricky task. They're trying to figure out how the world's insatiable need for energy will balance out against its equally pressing need to deal with climate change. After some negotiating, I managed to get one of those people on the phone. Helen Curry is Conoco's chief economist, and I asked her, does she think the world's need to drive down carbon emissions means oil demand will stop growing? Curry says Conoco's position is that won't happen anytime soon.
We see oil demand continuing to grow for decades into the future. In our view, it can continue to grow inclusive of climate change policies.
Curry says while Conoco thinks the rate of growth of oil demand might slow down, the company still believes oil demand is going to keep rising for quite some time. But now, there's this other end of the spectrum. Players like Equinor, the Norwegian oil company. Equinor is now projecting oil demand could start to decline by 2030, maybe even sooner. For a long time, the oil industry was pretty much united in its public denial that climate change was going to be a problem for them. But now, when it comes to how much oil the world will need and for exactly how long, big oil's united front is falling apart. Logan from Ceres says there's no doubt the world is going to need a lot more energy.
I think the real question is, what form will that energy take? And will it necessarily be fossil fuels? And that's where I think the risk of the industry being wrong is greatest and is the greatest threat to the long-term financial health of these companies.
It's impossible to know how this will play out. The energy industry is notoriously unpredictable. But if the climate change issue does lead to a decline in oil demand, Logan says companies that branch out from oil sooner rather than later are going to look really smart. Some of the world's biggest oil companies are leaning towards a new role, from climate change bad guys to, if not climate change heroes, maybe climate realists. And at least some of them think that might lead to less oil demand in the future. So, what could that mean for Alaska? Today, the Trump administration is pushing to allow drilling in offshore Arctic waters and in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and climate activists are pushing back. One of the scientific papers that inspired the Keep It in the Ground movement puts Alaska's oil industry squarely in the crosshairs of the global push to halt climate change. It says that in a world that keeps warming below 2 degrees Celsius, again, that's if we're going to avoid the worst impacts of climate change, quote, all Arctic resources should be classified as unburnable, unquote. Right now, many companies still see Alaska's oil as eminently burnable. But how long can that last? If the world starts to take more meaningful steps to curb climate change, Amy Harder, that's the energy reporter I spoke with earlier about Exxon, she thinks at some point, some oil, somewhere, is going to get left behind. And which oil companies make it in that situation will just be a case of cold, hard economics.
All of these oil companies say that their reserves are the most viable, they can get oil out the cheapest, that they will thrive in a carbon-constrained world. But it's a little bit like musical chairs. Everybody thinks they're going to get a spot, but by definition, not everybody can succeed.
So it's worth asking the question. If oil companies start playing an increasingly competitive game of climate change musical chairs, what oil will stay in the ground? Could it be oil in Alaska's Arctic, perhaps offshore, where drilling is expensive and especially controversial? In a carbon-constrained world, could the industry decide some of Alaska's oil just isn't worth drilling? For oil companies, climate change is an issue they can no longer escape. They're agreeing with activists that climate change is a problem. They even say they could support policies to do something about it. But if oil companies do eventually go one gigantic step further and keep some of their oil in the ground, it won't be because they've decided to save the planet. It will be because they're trying to save themselves.
This episode was edited by Annie Feit, Jennifer Pemberton, and Rachel Waldholz. It was mixed by Dave Waldron. James Glaves composed our theme music. Thank you to my extra eyes and ears at Alaska Public Media, Nat Herz, Aaron McKinstry, and Liz Ruskin. And thank you to Jennifer Ludden, Kirk Siegler, and Jeff Brady at NPR. Your edits and input really helped this episode shine. And I can't forget my tape syncers. Thank you to Ravenna Koenig, Ian Stewart, and Adam Frenier. And thank you to Vladimir Romanovsky at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, to Stantec, and to my anonymous sources for their outside expertise. Finally, a special thanks to all the staff and experts with the Columbia Energy Journalism Initiative. If you like what you hear, consider rating this podcast. If you're listening on NPR One, tap Interesting to help others find the show. I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh. A big thanks to you, from all of us at Alaska's Energy Desk, for listening to the second season of Midnight Oil, The Big Thaw.
Support for The Big Thaw comes from the Leedy Foundation and from the listeners of Alaska Public Media. Become a sustaining member today at alaskapublic.org. Thank you.